Well, good evening, everyone. So I was wondering, did the title intrigue you a bit? I hope so. I'm going to start by a poem I found about trees. It's called In the Worship of Trees, and it's written by George Knowles. Lord of the trees, strange how my mind thinks as I walk beside the trees. The ancient oak trees forming links with their breath of wisdom reaching me. Their lineage is unbroken in the vastness of time. How do I respond as I walk past their line? My thoughts are of sharing in their wisdom and dark, sensations of flotations as my hands clasp around the bark. Knowledge of ancient wisdom transcends the calm thoughts of time. A warmth deep inside me forms as I acknowledge this sign. Energy flows upward from below my knees. Awareness takes over me. It comes from the trees. Thoughts of yesterday's anger begin to fade as the pieces of broken lives are being remade. My mind is with the leaves as they float down to the ground. My pain has all gone without a sound. Who can tell me better than the trees? How to live life like the birds and the bees, knowing always that everything comes in threes, the words, the wisdom, and the Lord of the trees. You know, trees really dominate our world. They're one of the oldest living organisms. They have been our silent companions, permeating our most enduring tales and never ceasing to inspire us in our daydreams and our stories. Hermann Hesse called them the most penetrating of preachers. A forgotten 7th century English gardener wrote of how they speak to the mind and tell us many things, and they teach us many good lessons. You know, since time has begun, trees have been recognized as a symbol of life and the regeneration, and to some, the sacred knowledge of wisdom. To the primitive man, of course, trees and all their byproducts were a source used in all aspects of life. It offered shelter from the elements, food from its fruit, heat for a fire, clothing from its bark, and tools, as well as weapons, have been made from wood. Little wonder, then, that as the tree evolved, it did evolve as one of our earliest symbols of reverence to worship. Trees in general were believed to have once been God incarnate. Tree symbolism appears in the lore and mythology of many cultures. Some believe that giant trees supported the world. Others, like the Greco-Romans, believe that the gods themselves transformed into trees. Many early cultures believe that the first human beings were actually descendants from the trees. Of course, in many pagan belief systems, trees were considered magical. Its roots extended beneath the earth, and beneath the earth was always a realm of really great mystery. This was the underworld, the predominant place of God and the ancestral spirits. But so did trees, branches, they bear fruit, and they also reach up into the heavens, another realm of great mystery, and the predominant place of the goddess, where the physical manifestations of both the god and goddess can be seen in the sun and the moon and the stars. The old mystical beliefs of as above, so below, came from the trees. For as the tree had two equal parts, the top that reaches into the heavens, and above as the virtually identical part that reached deep below, deep down into the earth, as below. So as a small child, I had a couple of trees that were very, very special to me. I considered them very dear friends. One held a swing. I can remember many, many times feeling that this tree was welcoming me as I came to swing. I loved the sound the wind made in the branches. And it always, the tree seemed to move with me. I always felt welcomed, as if the tree really enjoyed my company and shared in my joy as I reached for the sky with my legs pumping. And then there was a climbing tree that I had. Often when I needed comfort, this tree really did cradle me. My heart would just burst open at being so close to the sky. And I remember being sheltered in this glorious green, the smell of that new spring leaves. Green just has such a lovely smell to it, doesn't it? It's so pure and clean. However, I can never forget my very best friend, which was a giant tree right across the street from me. This tree was so large that I could sit behind it, and I felt completely sheltered from the rest of the world. I really hesitate to call this tree it, because it really felt very personal to me. And it contained a small, hollowed-out place where I used to create a real fantasy world, tea parties with the little people that surely lived there, even if I really couldn't see them, and the quiet this place brought to my young soul. It was a true love that I felt from this tree and this experience as a young girl. So when I found this book, The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, written by a German forester named Peter Wohlleben, I just knew there was a talk in there waiting to be shared. But Wohlleben's own career actually began on the opposite end of the spectrum of caring. He was a forester, and his job was tasked with, of course, managing this forest and logging it. So, you know, of course, his goal was as much maximum output of lumber as possible. And he self-admittedly admits that he knew about as much about the hidden life of trees as a butcher knows about the emotional life of animals. He experienced the consequence of what happens when we turn something alive, be it a creature or a work of art, into a commodity. The commercial focus of his job was really actually warped, he said, how he viewed trees. Then about 20 years ago, everything changed for him, which I love. But here's somebody who was dealing with a commodity. He was viewing it as money. And all of a sudden, he shifted, and he changed the way he viewed trees. How this happened was as he had started organizing survival training and log cabin tours for tourists in his forest. And as they marveled at the majesticness of these trees. So here he's bringing people in, and he's seeing the trees through their eyes. They're looking at the trees completely different. Their enchanted curiosity, it just awoke his own love of nature. It was rekindled for him, which once again fills me with hope. So we can view the world and remember that any given moment, someone can stop the path they're on and rekindle their hope. They can come back to remembering who they truly are and why we're really here. So around this very same time, some scientists began conducting research in his forest. And so he once again was looking at trees through how the scientists were seeing them. So every day became more of a day of wonderment and self-discovery. So no longer was he able to see these trees as currency. He started actually seeing them as priceless living wonders that they are. And so a quote from his book that he wrote, "Life as a forester became exciting once again. Every day in the forest was a day of discovery. This led me to the unusual ways of managing the forest. When you know that trees experience pain and have memories, and that the tree parents live together with their children, then you can no longer just chop them down and disrupt their lives with giant machines." As I'm sure we all have wonderful trees in our lives. I mean, often when I drive down a really tree-lined road, it's impossible for me not to appreciate the beauty of that moment. It's just fascinating to me that here's a man who took the time to listen to trees. He explored the possibility of the language of trees and how they support one another. For I think that trees might be among our most profound metaphors, even perhaps a framework of wonderful knowledge, precisely because of the richness of what they say, is more than metaphorical. They speak a sophisticated, silent language, communicating complex information through smell, taste, and electrical impulses, much as we do with one another. Why are trees such social beings? Why do they share food with their own species and sometimes even go so far as to nourish their competitors? Can you imagine coming from a point of view of nourishing our competitors? The reasons are the same as for human communities. There are true advantages to working together. A tree is not a forest. For on its own, it cannot establish a consistent local climate, and it truly is at the mercy of wind and weather. as we are when we stand alone. But together, many trees create an ecosystem that moderates the extremes of the heat and the cold, stores a great deal of water, and generates a great deal of humidity. And in this very protected environment, trees can live to be very old. To get to this point, however, their community must remain intact, no matter what. If every tree were looking out only for itself, then very few of them would reach a ripe old age. Regular fatalities would result in many large gaps in the tree canopy, which would make it much easier for storms to get inside and uproot the trees. The heat of the summer would reach the forest floor and dry it out, and every tree would suffer. Every tree, therefore, is valuable to their community and is worth keeping around for as long as possible. That's how the trees view each other, that they're worthy of staying around as long as possible. And then that is even why sick individuals are supported and nourished until they recover. Next time, perhaps it will be the other way around, and the supporting tree might be the one in need of assistance. I love that trees have figured out that they need each other, that they want to offer support and love, understanding that maybe next time it will be them that are in need of such things. For a tree can only be as strong as the forest that surrounds it, and our forest assists in making our world the kind of place where we want to live. So as we, of course, have begun to understand non-human consciousness, what emerges from Wallaben's book about our oldest companions is an invitation to see anew what we have spent eons taking for granted, and in this act of seeing, to care more deeply about these remarkable beings that make life on this planet we call home not only infinitely more pleasurable, but possible at all. So there's a lot of science behind what this gentleman has written in his book. And the science, of course, points out what he's learned about how the trees communicate with each other, the things that they offer each other. But science has never really been my forte. I pay more attention to how it feels. So when I read his book, I had no problem buying into the things he was presenting to me. And I decided that rather than present a whole bunch of science and logical thought about why this is, I would just simply talk about the conclusions of what he discovered. I'm really more interested in the love we truly have of trees. I know that we all share it together. Trees are just wonderful, wonderful beings in our world. However, it must be said that to read about how trees communicate with one another and how they change when change is needed to benefit the whole of their environment is truly fascinating. I mean, there's whole species of trees that will only release their seed when they're under stress, a fire. How fascinating to me that they live forever, never releasing their seed until they're stressed. Then they realize they need to release their seed because their time has come to leave. But they still leave behind the regenerative growth for the future. You know, I just couldn't help but wonder why trees are so much better equipped at this mutual care system than we are. Perhaps it's the different time scales which our respective existences play out. And is some of our inability to see this bigger picture of shared existence in human communities just simply a function of our biological short-lived lives? I wonder, are the organisms that live on different timescales better able to act in accordance with this grander scheme of things in the universe that is deeply interconnected? When my grandson Julian was a very young boy, he was around 3, we had occasion to have dinner in Saugatuck. And as we were walking to the restaurant, Saugatuck has planted trees all along their roads. Julian felt the need to stop at every single tree, and he would pat it very gently. And then he would kiss it, and he would tell it what a good tree it was. He was so soft and gentle with every tree. Well, you know, my son was like, "Excuse me, Julian, we're trying to get somewhere." And I just said, "You know, I want to let this play out, so you just go ahead. I'll meet you later at the restaurant." Now, you might wonder, what would possess Julian to want to stop and touch every tree? Well, the only conclusion that I've drawn from that is because when we're so much younger, we're so much closer to our God essence, aren't we? We're so much open to the feeling of life around us. I think we recognize that it's not just us, that life exists on all levels around us. And he just made sure every tree got a kiss. And I just will always remember that memory of touching those trees with him. Because I loved that moment of touching each one of these trees and blessing them and telling them to grow strong. And so for my birthday this year, interestingly enough, Julian is now 14. His sister and his brother painted me clay pots for my birthday. And what I loved is Julian chose to paint trees. Four different trees on my clay pot of all the different seasons. Now, I doubt very much that he remembers this experience of kissing all the trees with me, but yet somewhere he does, doesn't he? Because this is the gift that he gave me, a clay pot with four trees on it. And a long time ago, I was gifted with a trip to the National Sequoia Forest in California, and I got to visit giant pine trees. Oh, they were so magnificent. Just what a lovely, lovely experience to be with these trees. And what I thought to do was I had found a piece of dead wood. And on this dead wood, I had written all the things that I was struggling with at the moment. All the things in my life that were very less than positive, I put on this piece of wood. And I just really felt compelled to bring it with me to the forest because I felt I could leave it there, that these trees somehow could take all these negative things and help enrich them with love and release them back into the world as a positive thing. And whenever I find myself getting stuck on one of those feelings, I think, no, I left that in the forest. I don't need to carry that any longer with me. So my dear friend Abigail just was blessed with a trip out to the Redwoods, and she had a couple stories that I just felt like when I was creating my talk really belonged here. So I invited her to come with me. So meet my friend Abigail.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, so as Julie said recently, my husband and I were lucky enough to fly out to California and visit the Redwoods National Forest as well as Yosemite National Park. And so we flew to California and we rented a VW camper van, so an old like 82 Vanagon like dome top, and we camped in and around the area, and it was magical. The Redwoods are utterly magical. And I have two very short stories about what I think are pretty obvious instances of the trees taking care of me. There's no other way to put it. So we're driving this camper van, and there's quite a bit of curvy mountain driving, and it's kind of a loose chassis and it's a stick shift, and my husband is a skilled driver, don't get me wrong, but it was a little terrifying at times because it's just curvy and there's just the mountains, and driving and I are not super tight. We're not good friends. And so we have an instant where we're driving along and it slips out of gear and just stalls for a brief second, nothing too scary. And not a breath later, not a moment later, there's another truck coming down the mountain. It comes down, rolls down the window and says, "Do you guys need a tow? I'm a tow truck." It just kind of shows up out of nowhere. And I was reminded that if we were to have any trouble, I knew we would be taken care of. And so another instance where that occurred that I thought was lovely and obvious, we did about probably 50 miles of hiking over a two-week span. And a lot of the hiking was very remote. We didn't have any cell service. And every once in a while, I would get into that sort of dead-in-a-ditch place where if something bad could happen, what would we do? You know, just that unhealthy monkey mind that happens. And so we're on one of our hikes, and I've been kind of thinking, oh my gosh, what if one of us falls or gets hurt or something happens? And a literal herd of firefighters in full gear who are on a training exercise in the middle of the woods come walking the other way like, "Hey guys, how you doing? We're just training." And they have like all of their gear on and they're hiking. And I'm like, okay, if we need help, there's help to be had. It is pretty obvious to me. And so it was just a reminder to me that these trees, they take care of us, and they made me feel safe and present and just taken care of. So that's all. Thank you.
The synchronicities of life, right? I'm creating a talk about trees, and a dear friend comes home and tells me these wonderful stories about trees. She also gave me this book, The Legacy of Luna. I don't know if any of you remember the time when this young woman was living in this tree. Her goal at the time was to try to stop the deforestation that was taking place and creating lots and lots of issues by this clear cutting of trees. And there was a part there that just really spoke to me, and I thought, I think it belongs in this talk. The Legacy of Luna. Luna was the tree, a redwood tree, that she actually lived in for 2 years. Did not come down even for 2 years. Because her goal was to try to bring attention to the fact that we need these trees in our lives. And then I began to pray. I knew that if I didn't find a way to deal with my anger and hate, they would overwhelm me, and I would be swallowed up in fear, sadness, and frustration. I knew that to hate and strike out was to be part of the same violence I was trying to stop. And so I prayed. Please, Universal Spirit, please help me find a way to deal with this, because if I don't, it's truly going to consume me. You see that a lot in activists. The intense negative forces that are so oppressing and destroying the earth wind up overcoming many of them. They get so absorbed by the hate and the anger that they become hollow. I knew that I didn't want to go there. Instead, I needed to turn my hate around into unconditional love. One day, through my prayers, an overwhelming amount of love started flowing into me, filling up that dark hole that had threatened to consume me. I suddenly realized that what I was truly feeling was the love of the earth, the love of creation. Every day we, as a species, do so much to destroy creation's ability to give us life. But the creation continues to do everything in its power to give us life anyway. And that is truly love. It is that beautiful source of creation of which we are all part of. I reasoned that I had to find it within myself to have the feeling of unconditional love, not only for the earth as a planet, but also for humanity, even for those destroying the gift of life right in front of me. We are all struggling, I think, right now in this time of history to find true love again, to remember that we are all connected and that we can stand up and do it in love, not hate, not violence, not anger. If there was ever a time to reach out and touch one another with real love and prayer, I believe it's now. And so, when I chose to speak about trees, because they remind me of that kind of love, there's never been a time in my life that I have not touched a tree and felt connection, felt real love, remembered my real purpose of being here.